Professor Lewin, welcome to El Microscopio.
Thank you.
Our first question, Professor Lewin, is why is there an interest now in finding a cure for HIV when we have known about the virus for over 30 years?
Yes, it's a very interesting question. As you say, the virus was discovered over 30 years ago, and since the mid-90s, we've had excellent treatments for HIV that control the virus, allow people to achieve a normal life expectancy, and also that reduce transmission of the virus. So why, after so many years, are we thinking about cure? I think there's a few reasons. First of all, although treatment is fantastic, it needs to be lifelong. So as soon as you stop the anti-HIV drugs or antiretrovirals, the virus rapidly returns, usually within about 1 to 4 weeks. And to fund lifelong treatment, to keep people in care lifelong, and to ensure that they take their drugs lifelong is a really big challenge, not just for high-income countries, but particularly for low-income countries where 80% of people with HIV live. The other issue is related to economics. The cost of antiretroviral therapy has reduced dramatically, particularly for low-income countries, but still currently the estimated costs for antiretroviral treatment is around $20 billion globally. And so to maintain that indefinitely is also a big challenge for the global community. And finally, although treatment now is simple and only often just one tablet a day, and toxicity of the drugs has dramatically reduced, there still are some both short-term and long-term side effects of the medications, and there still are a number of illnesses that we see occur at higher frequency in people with HIV on treatment than people without HIV, diseases which are classically diseases of aging, like cardiovascular disease, malignancy, bone disease, etc. So if we were able to find a way to allow people to safely stop their antiretrovirals and for the virus to stay under control, so effectively putting HIV into remission, that could have very big consequences for funding access to treatment globally.
Why is a cure currently not possible?
The reason why current antiretrovirals can't cure HIV is because the virus is able to go into hiding. When someone starts anti-HIV drugs, the virus very rapidly disappears from blood. And in fact, using standard laboratory tests for what we call the HIV viral load, or measuring HIV RNA in plasma, within about 4 weeks of initiating treatment, the viral load test becomes undetectable. But if you start looking in other spots, particularly inside cells or inside resting CD4 T cells, about 1 in a million cells carry a copy of the virus that's integrated in the patient's DNA and has a capacity to become infectious. So, and this is something that we're very familiar with as virologists. It's a phase of the viral life cycle common to many viruses, but including HIV, where the virus is able to establish a latent or silent form. So these latently infected cells, which include virus integrated in the DNA of a resting CD4 T cell, can persist indefinitely. Even though there's very few cells infected, these long-lived latently infected cells are really the major barrier to cure. In addition, the virus can go into hiding in other long-lived cells inside the brain and the gastrointestinal tract and lymphoid tissue, but that's probably less important than these long-lived latently infected T cells. And the reason, and current treatment doesn't do anything to latent virus. So what the idea behind finding a cure is ways to tackle these long-lived latently infected cells.
You have developed several in vitro models for HIV latency to identify novel anti-latency drugs. Could you please tell us about those models and how relevant are they to the in vivo situation?
So, as I mentioned earlier, latently infected cells are pretty rare in patients. If you take blood from an HIV-infected patient on treatment, about one in a million, maybe a bit more, cells carrying an infectious virus. So it makes studying latency very difficult using patient-derived blood. So there's been a lot of interest over many years to identify ways to establish latency in vitro, and there are now many models that have successfully done that. And several years ago, we identified that we could establish latency in vitro if we took resting CD4 T cells and incubated those cells with a range of chemokines or proteins that are important for directing T cell trafficking. And if you just take a resting CD4 T cell, HIV doesn't infect resting T cells very well. But if we place the resting T cell in an environment, particularly with some specific chemokines, we were able to overcome the barriers for HIV to enter that resting cell and establish latency. The chemokines that we identified were important were chemokines that bind to some key receptors expressed on resting T cells, one of them being CCR7. We then have moved on to look at other potential models that mimic latent infection in vitro, and have also shown that cell-cell signaling is also an important factor in allowing the virus to successfully enter a resting T cell, and myeloid dendritic cells also play an important role. So this was very exciting for us, and I think for the field, because we were able to mimic latent infection in an in vitro model, achieving about 1 in 10 to 1 in 100 cells to be infected, which is a much more feasible model to study as opposed to patient-derived cells. I will say there have been many other very elegant models developed by other investigators that use different principles, but our model has allowed us to really understand those very early events in establishing latency. You asked how those models compare to patient cells. Well, that's we don't have all the answers to that yet. In the very early days, most latency was largely studied in cell lines, which are immortalized and constantly dividing. And I think we now know that cell lines aren't a very good model for latency, because latency in vivo happens in non-dividing resting cells. But there are now quite a few models that are able to establish latency in primary T cells. And we interestingly recently participated in a international multi-center study that compared a range of different latency models and patient-derived cells. And we compared how those models responded to drugs that activated latent infection. And interestingly, in that study, our model of chemokine-induced latency clustered most closely with patient-derived cells. I think the real proof in the pudding, though, is what we find with clinical trials. So we may find drugs, for example, that alter latency in vitro in one or two or several models. The question really is what happens when that drug is given to someone with HIV infection. And we're just at the very beginning of learning that, because learning what will predict a response in vivo, and that's really the most important question that the field needs to answer now.
Professor Lewin, what strategies are being tested for finding a cure?
So there are numerous studies and strategies now being tested, and they include eliminating latently infected cells, which includes very early treatment, activating latent infection or boosting an immune response to latently infected cells. And the second approach is making cells resistant to HIV. So I'll talk a little bit about the strategy for eliminating latently infected cells. And I think one strategy that looks very promising but may have limited application in the long term. But what we're learning now is if you treat HIV very early after infection, you can dramatically reduce the amount or number of lately infected cells or reduce the hold the virus has on finding a hiding place. And we know that from a number of studies. The first and most convincing evidence, I think, comes from studies of babies born to HIV positive mothers who haven't received treatment during pregnancy. And in that setting, we know the exact time that the baby would have been exposed to HIV. And if you treat a baby very early after delivery, as we saw in a quite well publicized case, the Mississippi baby, the baby had very, very low or almost no virus detected in its blood on treatment, no detectable lately infected cells using the current ways we have to measure latency in a patient and in blood from an HIV infected patient. And that baby then stopped antiviral drugs at 18 months of age and has been followed now for 2 years, and the virus never came back. And so similar reports have been described in adults who were treated early infection, who then stopped their antiretrovirals, and the virus, although still detectable, never bounced back to its pre-treatment levels. And there are now many studies looking at very early treatment of both babies and adults to understand how common this might be to why early treatment prevents the virus getting a hold on the reservoirs, and how common it is to stay in remission after stopping antiviral treatment. We know almost certainly that early treatment doesn't lead to remission, which probably is a better word here than cure, in everyone who starts early treatment, but maybe in perhaps 5 to 15% of adults, they may be able to achieve remission. So there's very early treatment is being tested as a intervention. Of course, very early treatment doesn't help the 35 million people already currently infected with HIV. So we need other ways to eliminate latently infected cells. And a second approach that my own group's been very active in is to activate the latent virus. And the idea behind this is when a virus is in a latent form, it's integrated in the host DNA, but it doesn't express viral proteins and therefore is not visible. The latently infected cell is not visible to the immune system or antiviral drugs. So one idea here is that the latent silent virus is activated. And by activating, and that would be done in someone that's on antiretroviral treatment, any virus that comes out following activation couldn't go on to infect new cells. And the virus on its way out may in itself kill the cell, or at least will allow for expression of viral proteins to be recognized by the immune system. And this approach is being called shock and kill, to shock the latent virus so that it starts to be expressed and then for the cell to be killed. There are a whole lot of different drugs that are being used that appear to shock or activate latent infection, at least in vitro. One family of drugs that was known about for quite a long time, histone deacetylase inhibitors. They're drugs that are used to treat various forms of malignancy, and several HDAC inhibitors are already licensed for the treatment of malignancy. So there's been a number now of clinical trials of HDAC inhibitors asking whether they can shock the virus out of latency. It seems they can do that. We're at the very early stages of testing how effective they are. The HDAC inhibitor may not shock all the virus and probably doesn't lead to death of the cell. Coupled with shocking or activating the virus, there's a lot of interest in coming in with something to kill the activated cell. This could be through boosting immunity through a therapeutic vaccine. We don't have a effective therapeutic vaccine at the moment, meaning a vaccine given to someone already infected. But there are some really nice vaccines that look very effective as prophylactic vaccines, at least in monkey models, and they potentially could be used in this context. Or there are other ways to boost killing of a recently activated latently infected cell is to use other immunomodulatory drugs for which there's been tremendous advances for in the management of cancer. And these are drugs that manipulate or reverse T cell exhaustion or block negative regulators of T cell activation. And one target that's been in very advanced clinical development is PD-1. PD-1 is a marker of an exhausted T cell, and if you block the activity of PD-1 through an antibody, you can boost antigen-specific T cells. This, at the moment, already looks very promising in the treatment of melanoma and other solid organ malignancies, and may be a way of tackling or eliminating long-lived latently infected cells. And there is a clinical trial just started in the US looking to see if blocking that protein, PD-1, will indeed boost the HIV-specific T cell response, which might be key in clearing out latently infected cells. And the last approach is a bit more high tech, and that is to engineer or make cells resistant to HIV. And this really comes from what a very well-known case, and the only case really of true cure of HIV, the Berlin patient, or a man by the name of Timothy Brown. And his case was reported several years ago, but he's an HIV-infected man who had leukemia and needed a bone marrow transplant. And he received a transplant while living in Berlin from a donor who was naturally resistant to HIV. And the donor was naturally resistant to HIV because the donor lacked the receptor that HIV needs to enter a cell, and that receptor is called CCR5. We know about, on average, about 1-2% of Caucasians have a mutation that makes them CCR5 negative, so they're effectively immune or protected from getting most strains of HIV. So in Timothy Brown's case, he received a transplant, in fact, on two occasions from a donor who was CCR5 negative, and Mr. Brown stopped his antiretroviral drugs shortly after the transplant, and the virus was never to be found again in any of his tissues or in the blood using a range of tests, and he's now been off treatment for 6 years. So this sparked really a whole new line of investigation of could there be other ways to knock out CCR5 expression without a transplantation, without a transplant, which is obviously a very expensive, highly invasive, and in fact dangerous intervention that you would only contemplate in someone who needed a transplant for another reason, such as leukemia. And this, so a way to knock out CCR5 is possible now through gene therapy. And in those studies, and these studies have already completed and ongoing in humans, people with HIV infection on treatment undergo leukapheresis, so large volumes of blood are removed. Ex vivo, their T cells undergo gene editing using gene scissors, there are several different gene scissors available now, but the current one being used in these trials is something called zinc finger nucleases. And these zinc finger nucleases or gene scissors are able to remove a gene of interest, in this case CCR5. And then those CCR5 negative cells are expanded ex vivo and then reinfused into a patient. And those studies have been done. That process has been shown to be safe and feasible. And at the moment, the investigators have been able to achieve levels of around 6% of gene-modified cells. And the idea here is that if you could replace the T cells that are susceptible to HIV with the T cells that are resistant to HIV, this could be another strategy. Clearly a very high tech and currently quite expensive strategy, but does look quite promising.
What approach do you think looks most promising?
We're at the very early stages of testing a range of approaches. You know, finding a cure for HIV or a virus that's been so well adapted to hide effectively from the immune system and antiviral drugs is going to be quite a difficult task, although a very important one. So I think we need to test multiple different approaches. Many of these approaches are in very, very early phases of development. I think what we want, though, ultimately, is an intervention that is cheap and accessible and scalable. 80% of people living with HIV live in low-income countries. And so I think the long-term goal of this is to get an intervention that's actually available to the majority of people that are infected with HIV. What looks most promising? I'm not really sure at the moment. I think all of these avenues need to be explored. I think we need to learn a whole lot more about latency, how it's established, how it's controlled, how it's reversed. And I think we also need a lot of collaboration amongst all the different approaches being used, as well as collaboration amongst academics, government, and particularly the private sector to really move this field forward.
Thank you very much for this interview. It's been a pleasure to have you in the Microscopia.
Thanks very much.